Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, September 2nd, and it is 1:30 p.m. This is Talk on the Rock, and I'm your host, Colette Zarnicki. Today marks a special milestone for one of our Wranglites who grew up here, but left and is still committed to telling Wrangle's story. This person is Ronan Rooney, who created the podcast Wrangle History Unlocked. And today we're celebrating the fifth anniversary of Wrangle History Unlocked. You can call in to ask a question or leave a comment. The number to KSDK is 874-2345. Hi, Ronan. How are you today?
Hey, Colette. It's great to be here with you.
Great. Thanks for coming in and congratulations. 5 years.
Thank you. I should bake a cake and blow out a candle. I feel proud.
Yes, yes. So was it exactly, was it September 2nd, 2020? Was it the first episode?
Yeah, the first episode came out 5 years ago today. It was about King Lear of Wrangle. It was just the doldrums of COVID-19 lockdown. And here came Ronan with this Wrangle History podcast to break the silence. And I've been doing it 5 years since. I'm just loving it.
Yeah, amazing. Will you talk about how long it took for you to research that first episode on King Lear of Wrangle and what inspired you to start with that story?
So it was the beginning of March 2020, when COVID lockdown really hit, and suddenly I was working from home and I was not seeing people and I was missing a chance to talk to people. And suddenly my summer vacation schedule was blank. I had no trips coming up and I was just like, what am I going to do? And so it was around April that I started researching Wrangle stuff. It was a way to connect with people, a way to have a conversation, something to talk about, something to share. And I decided that I'll do this and I'll find some way to share it with people. And that's where podcasting came in. It was sort of the perfect thing to work on over the summer. How do you record this stuff? What makes a good podcast? What makes a good story? And so I worked on it all summer long in 2020 and then dropped that first episode in September and have not looked back since.
Amazing. And so you were in Oregon. You still are in Oregon, right?
Yeah.
And how long? Okay. So in 2020, when did you leave Wrangle? How long have you been away by that time?
So I graduated in 2003. And I came back for summers and for a lot of holidays. But now maybe you see me once a year, every other year. It's been over 20 years now that I've lived outside of Wrangle, but I still have a fond place for it in my heart.
Yeah. Yeah. It's home.
So, yeah. It really feels that way when I come back.
Yeah. So Wrangle History Unlocked is more than a podcast. It's a multi-platform project as well. There's a blog and then there's a timeline. It includes the Star of Bengal, the 1869 bombardment of Wrangle, and recently the presidential passage on Warren G. Harding in Wrangle in the Eyes of Shakishtin. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Shakishtin, yeah, absolutely. Great. She's one of my faves they've ever profiled.
Amazing. Would you just talk about that story briefly?
Yeah. So I did a series called Time Capsule, A.C. Pillsbury in Wrangle in 1898. This photographer named Pillsbury comes right at the beginning of the Klondike Gold Rush, and he takes so many photos of Wrangle. And so I did my best to cobble them together from sources I could find online, from the University of Washington, from the Tongass Historical Society out of Ketchikan, and I put them into a great big post. There's like about 50 photos of Wrangle from 1898 by one photographer. And in that collection, there is a Tlingit woman who was not identified by name in the captions of the photos, but I recognized her from some pretty iconic photos that I had seen circulating other places. So I had a real privilege this summer to go visit Michael and Carolyn Knorr, who have an incredible private collection. And I spent days looking through their photos and I found more pictures of this woman. and learned a little bit about her. Her name was Skak-Ish Tin. She was a Tlingit woman. She lived to be reportedly over 100 years old, and she lived down around where Curlyville is now, kind of right next to Raimi's bar. And she was photographed so frequently, and there were little anecdotes about her that wound up in some historical sources. So I put them together just to tell what I could find about her. And she was just absolutely fascinating to know something more about this face that I had seen so many times, to know she has a name and something about her identity too.
Yeah. And that's part of that story is in your blog. It's not the podcast, right? What
Right.
makes you decide whether it's a blog or, what or audio form?
So I do have a podcast episode coming up next month. I won't tell you much about it, but I will say one word: Bigfoot.
Oh.
Here's kind of what happened from the past year and a half. You and I got to do your second ever talk on the rock was with me, and it was back in March 2024. And you've done over 50 of these now, and so congratulations to you. This has just been awesome.
Thank you.
As a historian, I appreciate any time you get somebody to tell their story on the record. It is absolutely vital for historians to have that kind of stuff.
Definitely.
So the reason I've been blogging more is my kids, Rosemary, is 8, my son Conan is 5, and so my house is a bit noisier than it was 5 years ago. Finding time to record here in my bedroom studio is tougher. So I turned to blogging as a way I could get stories out faster, but I could tell more visual stories. The fun of the Skak-Ish Tin blog post is that there's all these incredible pictures. And with Pillsbury, here's about 50 photos of Wrangell. So I'm really having fun playing with the visual storytelling, and I can come back to podcasting and the two can support each other. I can tell you a story and I can say, if you want to know what Wrangell looked like, go to my website and look at the blog post. You'll see pictures of it at that time too.
Yeah, and it is fascinating. It's amazing. It's a beautiful website with the visuals like you were talking about, and it's incredible. So how many, there's a lot of information on Wrangell History Unlocked. How many different stories are do you keep track? How many different stories are there?
Sometimes I'll go back and I'll browse and I'll read something I wrote, 3 or 4 years ago, and I go, I don't even remember writing this. I did all the research, I said it, and then I go and I read it and I go, oh yeah, I remember doing that a little bit. Or what will happen is I'll go to Google and I'll be looking up a subject and the top results are me. And I think that's kind of cool, but then I'm also like, well, that doesn't help me at all. I've done dozens and dozens of stories, and part of the strategy of Wrangell History Unlocked was that this was going to be lightweight. It was going to be post on the internet. Don't invest a ton of capital into trying to produce a book or a magazine or newsletter. Just do the stories and let the big stories just float to the top. Let those ones rise to the surface, and we'll see what people are really most interested in. And then try to build stories around those things that people really care about.
And so you do get your inspiration from other people. Like, do they ask you what they want to learn more about for you to
Yeah,
research?
I get requests,
Okay.
and I do my best. It's tough though, because not everything is very well documented. Some things are great topics. It's just I can't find anything about it when I go to my usual sources and start looking up keywords. So what I typically do though is I take the topics that I know are somewhat discussed other places, maybe lightly, and then I come in, I do a deep dive. Like, for example, Warren G. Harding, a sitting US president, came to Wrangell in 1923. Other people have talked about it, but they tend to really kind of lightly gloss over it. They tend to talk about Harding going to Nanana and hitting the Golden Spike to finish the Alaska Railroad. So I thought, well, let's just hold the spotlight on Wrangell. Let's talk about what he did there, what it meant to the community in 1923, And that's just one jigsaw puzzle piece in the bigger story about Harding's trip to Alaska.
And in that story, there's, like you said before, there's the visuals of, old Wrangell, and where he spoke as well to the people, and also the Tlingit, like war canoes, and how the Tlingit people paddled to welcome him, right?
That's right. Isn't that so interesting? At the same exact time that's going on, Tilly Paul and Charlie Jones are about to go on trial for voting. So there's these extreme things happening. There's this conversation about who's really a US citizen, and then the president of the United States shows up, but he's greeted by a Tlingit war canoe, and there's just these extremes happening at one time. And so I thought that was kind of an interesting time period to talk about.
Absolutely, definitely. It really is. So has any person throughout these past 5 years, have they been I'm sure they've been inspired by your work, but has any specific person been inspired by your work and wanted to share one of their own stories that inspired you to work off of that story?
I've had so many people reach out and, talk about what it means to them to know something about these stories. When I'm talking about the history of your community, of your town, for many people, this touches on the generations in their own family. They know that their parents and grandparents, their great grandparents, great great grandparents, and even further, were part of these stories in some way because they were alive when it happened or they played a role in it. And so that's really the part that is very moving for me, is that I give people some sense of their own family history. A really cool connection that I made through a family member was Dorothea Rooney, who lives in Wrangell. She told me about this little cemetery at Petroglyph Beach that I had never seen for myself. And it's the Choquette Family Cemetery. And it's got a few headstones, maybe no more than four or five. And she told me where to find it. And so when my wife Mary and I came to Wrangell last, we went and looked for it. We couldn't find it at Petroglyph Beach. We were way too far off in the woods. And so Dorothea came and she showed us where to find it. It's right off the rampway there. You can see it. And it's this incredible little cemetery for a family that was very influential in Wrangell. And so I thank Dorothea for giving me a heads up about that. I'm so glad I got to see it for myself and then later on write about it for the blog.
Wow. Yeah. And are there descendants from that family at all that you
Yes.
there are? And did
The
they?
Choquette family name. I mean, some people don't have the last name, but they are descendants of Buck Choquette. And he came to Wrangell. Right before 1861, he's the one who's credited with finding gold on the Stickeen River that kicks off the very first gold rush in Alaska. And he goes on to become a very important member of the community. He marries Shakes's daughter and has several children. And he's a well-liked guy. People who knew him really regarded the man highly. He was kind and he was intelligent. And so I was honored to pay tribute to the family in that way through just sort of talking about some of the background of that little cemetery.
Yeah, what is it like for you when you interact with descendants of people that, you covered?
I feel like I'm doing history on the hardest level. If this was a video game, I've put it on the hardest setting because I'm doing history for people who are descendants of these figures in the place living where it happened. It touches on deeply cultural issues, family issues. It is so personal, and it's personal for me because I have these Wrangell roots that I've nurtured over the years. So it's a thrill because every story, in some respect, is personal. Every historic figure that I'm writing about, it's personal. I attach meaning to it and I think about how people are going to feel about what I say. So I choose my words very carefully. That's something I like about doing the podcast and the blog, is that I get to think before I speak so that I say things the right way. It's a really a privilege too that people have been so into it.
Yeah. And in a way, it's, I mean, it keeps the story alive. The story is here, which still exists, and the people still exist, the descendants. It's pretty impressive.
We talk a lot about, for quite a few years now with Wrangell, we worry about things shutting down and leaving. We worry about programs that we appreciate closing and moving away. The thing about history is that it can never leave you. It's always there. Whether you have a sign up about it or a monument or whether you're talking about it, the history is there. So if I can just shed some light on some of these things, who knows, a generation from now, 100 years from now, some of these historical topics may be mainstay planks of what we think of as the Wrangell identity. And that's really, I want Wrangell to be able to tap into what is authentic and true and real about itself. And that's what all of these historical stories are.
Yeah. And there's so, like we mentioned, there's many other stories you've covered. Will you talk about your process over these last 5 years on covering so much information? Like, how do you choose? You know, how do you balance all of this?
It's sometimes tempting to me to do things that are topical and timely based on something that's, say, in the national or state news, and then I can do a story that's related to it. I've had mixed success with that. It's just really hard to do that because the national conversation changes so fast. I do try to do stories that I think contribute something to a bigger sense of a story that you might know just a little bit about. I at any given point, I have five or six stories in the work, and I try to advance them. And then I say, okay, this one is ready. I've got to get this one out. And then I try to grind on it and get it out the door. The process is really just one of continuous learning, always adding to what I know. And after 5 years of doing this, things are cross-connected now. I was writing that Warren G. Harding in 1923 story, and I just knew instantly, oh, this is the same time as Tilly Paul and Charlie Jones. And I put that connection together and other things that are happening that sort of give you a bigger picture of what's going on at the time.
Yeah, definitely. And how do you balance the fact checking with history with your storytelling?
Yeah, the fact is, I go on Google, I look up some stuff, and I'm the top result. I even sometimes, folks, I even try out ChatGPT. I try out AI and I ask it questions. And what has happened now is that AI is citing me back to myself because AI is on the web and it's crawling and scraping information and it's taking my stuff and it's feeding it back to me. So I better have my facts right because the stuff is getting incorporated.
Yeah.
Something that I really love about listening to the type of journalism you do for the radio is that you'll interview somebody and let them speak. You'll give them ample time to explain themselves and you'll play the clip. And I try to do that with my research as well. I just give you a whole passage. I tend not to use one or two word quotations, but a whole paragraph. So you really see somebody's perspective and how they think about it, how they talk about it. And that gives the listener the confidence that they're getting the actual truth from the source.
Definitely, definitely. And can you just talk about how unraveling all these stories of Wrangell, what has that meant to you?
It is, I just turned 40. And I was warned. 40 is this interesting age where, I feel like I'm right in the middle. I've spent years collecting people. I've had to say goodbye to some people. I'm sort of looking now at, what does life mean? What does it mean to have a legacy? And I think this historical research hopefully can be what I'm remembered for in Wrangell. I had the first 18 years to build some kind of reputation. And I felt when I would come visit, oh, fewer and fewer people know who I am. They don't know me. But now, when I show up, people have heard of me. And that really means a lot. So when I meet somebody, we can just start talking. We don't have to do introductions. They know who I am. And they tell me their historical stories. And it's like we've always known each other. I love that. That is one of the best things about this.
That's awesome. Just there's this like instant trust between you
Yeah.
two.
I'm a little bit famous in one place, and that's exactly what I wanted. I just wanted to be able to come back to Wrangell and not be a stranger. The idea of being a stranger in my hometown just didn't jive with me.
Yeah, I understand. What stories have surprised you the most while you conducted your research?
Well, the story that I did about Walter C. Waters and the Bear Totem Store that opened up on Front Street in 1922, was a curio store, and he managed to acquire quite a bit of Tlingit artifacts, which were then sold in 1953 to Seattle Art Museum and Denver Art Museum. And that story kind of blew my mind. I did not realize how much stuff Wrangell had at one point in artifacts of cultural patrimony, and then how much was shipped out of the town and is just drawing visitors in these big cities to these art museums. Of all the blog posts I've done, that is the most visited page of all of them. And so learning about that story was quite eye-opening for me, but seeing the reaction from the reading audience really blew my mind too.
Yeah. And I believe, coincidentally, I was walking on Front Street and I haven't read all the plaques. You know, I walk my dog. And so I did read a plaque the other day and it was there. I believe it, what you're talking about was at, Katie Rooney's hair salon.
Around there.
Around there. Okay.
I think Michelle's Taste of Asia might be the building now that had Walter
Oh,
C. Waters
okay.
business. Yeah,
Great.
those, you know, those plaques are I read them too. I think they're kind of an example of good history. Those went up around, I think, the 80s and the 90s, and they gave people something. But when I do my stories, I really want it to feel like a story. And those plaques sometimes to me just feel like, here's just a list of dates and things that happened here. I'm so much more interested in giving you a story about there was a conflict over some valuable thing, and here was the sides, and here's how it fell out.
Yeah, definitely. These are the people, all of it. Do
Yes.
you ever face roadblocks while researching history, and how do you get past that?
Well, I'm working on Wrangell Institute right now, and I re-listened to our interview from a year and a half ago, Colette, and I told you I was working on Wrangell Institute then. I continue to research. I've done a few blog posts sort of related to topics in that area. It's an emotionally tough topic. The thing about King Lear, my first podcast back in 2020, is that it was just a very different time and distant, and I didn't really know anybody connected to him. Wrangell Institute is not ancient history. Wrangell Institute is very familiar to many people who are still alive. The legacy of it is still impactful. I remain very optimistic about the site and, you know, what we can do as a people to heal and learn from the Wrangell Institute. But it's more challenging. I feel a little bit like how you might feel as a journalist dealing with the living. The privilege of a historian is that mostly I deal with the dead. And so it's been an emotional journey to research Wrangell Institute.
Yeah, and because of that, I'm curious, like, I mean, you mentioned earlier you are able to think before speaking and how you want to tell the story, and obviously that's a very sensitive topic. How do you, what's your method with handling such a sensitive topic?
I talk to my wife Mary about this. I talk to my mother Alice Rooney. I reach out to people a lot to ask them what they think. And you know, at this point, I've sort of found my people in Wrangell who are close to me, who I can bring sensitive topics to. And it's really a demonstration of the fact that I'm not just trying to give you some clickbait stories. I'm really hoping that in every topic I research and I talk about, there's a measure of healing that comes with it. That where information was lost, I can restore that. Where we're building bridges, it's never about just throwing something into the maw of the internet to generate buzz. And so those people help keep me grounded. But ultimately, I'm really driven by a belief that people deserve the truth, whether it's pretty or not. People are intelligent, and it is actually worse to maintain a lie. It's actually worse to obscure the truth just because it's uncomfortable. So that kind of keeps me going.
Yeah. And I'm also curious about the Wrangell Institute. The information that you found, is it mostly centralized in Alaska, or is there more information like elsewhere where you found it, like in DC or wherever?
There is a good amount of information in the National Archives, some that I've tapped into out of Washington, D.C. But the truth about the Wrangell Institute is if I was to show you a map of Alaska and I was to say, here's Wrangell, I'm going to put a pin in Wrangell, and then here's all the places in Alaska that are connected to the Wrangell Institute, we would have a pin all over the state, every region of the state, from the North Slope out to the Aleutians, South Central into Southeast Alaska. And if we had connected a string from Wrangell to all those pins, we would cover the state. Nothing connects Alaska together quite like the Wrangell Institute story. Its impact was just that incredible. And so it is a big story. A challenge for me is as I'm talking about these students who came from all across Alaska, I'm also trying to learn something about their communities, about their culture and their way of life, so that I can better tell their stories or understand where they're coming from. That's a big story that connects Wrangell to the whole of Alaska.
Yeah, thank you. Do you have an idea when that story will be out?
I've told people Wrangell Institute in 2026. I continue to do little blog posts based off of things that I've learned along the way to sort of prepare myself. I know it's the kind of story that I want to do before the summer. I think about summertime as tourist season. And I'm like, well, maybe I'll do the stories that are more relevant to people who are actively working with tourists in the summer. And then, fall, winter, spring, that can just be for us Wrangell people who want to talk about the things that are affecting us here in Wrangell.
Yeah. Moving on to another topic, what has been the biggest highlight of the last 5 years of you producing Wrangell History Unlocked?
Oh, there have been so many. I was walking with my mother, and my third grade teacher, Mrs. Brown, called her and said, Alice, I'm just so proud of your son. I was like, when does that happen? You have to win a gold medal sometimes to get your elementary school teacher to call up your mom and say that she's proud of you. I was really honored in 2023 to get an award of excellence for the Star of Bengal series from the American Association for State and Local History. The U.S. Army's apology for the bombardment of Wrangell that happened in Wrangell this past January. I was invited to speak, and it still blows my mind. That whole gathering was incredible. The regalia and the artifacts of patrimony and the U.S. Army, everyone looked amazing. And to speak to that crowd was a true highlight for me. I'll always appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely. And is there anything else you would like to share about, the last 5 years of Wrangell History Unlocked?
My suggestion is if you are interested in doing something like this, take as much as you can from me. I'm not going to be around forever. I think about what I'm doing is I am a gentle layer of leaves on the ground, and then I will be gone, and there will be more leaves that come lay on top. You know what I mean? So come through, go into my footnotes, copy my sources, tell it your own way. You can find everything that I've done is at wranglehistoryunlocked.com. You can find the podcast Wrangle History Unlocked on just any podcast service. And my goal is to not corner the market on Wrangle History. I don't intend to block out anybody else. I really hope that I can just feed other people the information that they need in order to be able to do this for themselves long into the future.
Amazing. And you did mention Bigfoot earlier this half hour. So are we to expect something on Bigfoot next month or later this month?
I think next month. I think I'm going to a little bit before Halloween, just because it's the right kind of vibe for Halloween. We'll do it then and have some fun with it. I do intend to do more podcasts on other topics too. I've always enjoyed it, but I did this pivot in the past year or so to the visual stuff, and so now I can go back into the podcasting, and then even on my Instagram account at Wrangle History. I'm getting familiar with video, so just trying different things out.
Really, really cool and super inspiring. Thank you so much for joining us, Ronan. It was a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Yes. And that was Ronan Rooney with Wrangle History Unlocked. Today marks his 5th year anniversary producing that. And we are going to hop on into World Cafe.